session number 19919, reel 2.
Captain Linnell, reel 2. So, which unit were you in for D-Day?
We were in this new unit, 48 Royal Marine Commando, and we landed with the Canadian 3rd Canadian Division, and the 7th, I think it was the 7th Brigade. And we had to land 45 minutes behind the North Shore Regiment, which was from Nova Scotia. I never could understand why we would be put on the left hand of a beach area. There was a gap from where we were to where 41 Commando were landing in Lyon-sur-Mer. Being on the left hand of this meant that the enemy had a good shoot from the flank right into our sides, and the landing turned out to be quite disastrous. We were given what they called landing craft infantry small, which is about the size of a fair mile. These were made of wood, and of course shots could go straight through them, and they had ramps that were stuck over the front, and it was quite a high descent, and the sea was terribly rough that day, and the ramps were bobbing up and down, and it was very difficult for people and for the troops to go down. Also, we had 6 ships altogether, and several of them stuck on these tetrahedras, which are these underwater obstacles. One troop, never did get ashore. They were picked up and taken back to England. And by this time, I had the heavy weapon troop. I was in charge of the heavy weapon troop with a couple of Vickers machine guns and 2 3-inch mortars. Now, one of my mortar crews was on their ship, which was they went back to England, so I lost that half of my troop, or part of it, and the other machine no, I beg your pardon, it was the machine gunners that went back. So one of the machine gunners went back, but one of the mortar crews was wiped out on a very bad part of the beach where one had to go around a wall, and there was a rifleman with a very good shot had piled up a heap of bodies there, and he knocked off one of my mortar crews. I had one Marine who was an old man. He said he was 35, and of course the average, that was way above the average age. But this chap went back to this area and picked up every piece of mortar equipment, set it up, and when I went by, he said, "Number one, mortar ready to fire, sir," which I thought was... So I put him in for a medal, but he didn't get any. No.
Which company were you in?
Well, I was in the heavy weapon, it was called S, or for support. It was a heavy weapon troop. I would have about quite a small number of men, only about 40, with an officer in charge of the mortars. I was really firing the mortars, the machine guns, and my friend Mike Aldworth, the lieutenant, was in charge of the mortars.
Was the resistance on the beach worse than you had anticipated?
Well, it wasn't so much on the beach. Once you got ashore, we had to go up a little fire, an enfilade, little path up through the cliffs. The cliffs were about 20 feet high, nothing very big, but there was this entrance, exit we went into, we assembled in this area, and then we moved eastwards towards the town of Langrune-sur-Mer. We landed on the other side of Saint-Aubin-sur-Mer, and in Langrune was a German strong point surrounded by a big concrete wall. And it was very difficult to get there. They also, the Germans had tunnels going from house to house and underneath this road, etc. And their resistance was very determined.
And you attacked her?
Well, I didn't. My job was rather an easy one. With the machine gunners, I had to defend the rear. And it's I understand that the tanks from the 21st Panzer Division was on its way towards where we were, and they were luckily stopped by the British anti-tank gunners of the division there. So I had an easy time looking to the rear.
And then?
Well, we were moved the next day. There was a radar station inland, and we were told to contain it more than attack it. And this was a big German fortification, which was reduced, I think, about 2 days after we left. But I think about the 9th of June, we went over Pegasus Bridge, which was, as you know, taken by the airborne, and into the high ground, overlooking the Orne and overlooking the beaches, to deny the Germans the opportunity of watching what was going on the beach areas. And we stayed there for several weeks, actually.
Doing what?
Well, we had forward defensive positions, so we were doing patrols, and we were the left end of the whole of the Allied armies. In fact, there was a write-up in the press, I think it was the Daily Telegraph, about Eisenhower's left-hand man. So we had nobody on our flank at all. And we were relieved and sent back, relieved by another commander, 41, for a time, in the forward positions, and we went back into a rear position. But we were still under mortar fire, so it wasn't very happy.
Any incidents you can recount from this period when you were to the east of the River Orne?
Not really. It was just defensive positions, and we'd be doing patrolling. The Germans would be doing patrolling. In fact, we shared a house. The Germans would be overlooking their strong point there, and they may use it one day, and we try and use it another day. And from these windows, it was possible to see a strong point pointing out to sea, and we could bring down mortar fire on them when any of them were walking around.
Did the Germans leave anything behind in the house when you took it over?
No. We didn't really take it over. We patrolled to it. He used it as a forward observation point.
What opinion had you formed of the German enemy by now?
Well, they didn't think very much of them, really. They weren't terribly aggressive. They were just more or less seeing it out, as far as I can see.
They were passive?
No, they were very active with their mortaring, and not very active with their patrolling.
Were you wounded at all?
Not then, no, not at this stage.
What was the morale of your unit like by then?
Oh, very high, very high.
Did you feel that you could break out from this beachhead?
Well, if you're breaking out from a beachhead, you're going to do it with more heavily armored vehicles. We didn't have any heavy army vehicles. But anyhow, we later on were moved to an area near Troarn, where the line, the front line, was very near to the German front line. We were not much more than 150 feet, which was not very pleasant. But we were able to do quite a lot of stonking with our mortars on them. But then the Germans pulled away, and the chase started.
Had you been happy with the equipment which you had in Normandy?
Oh, yes, indeed.
Any contact with the French, the Normans?
Not very often, no. No, they were usually where we were. The civilians would be evacuated. Well, I also missed out something before. I didn't mention the fact that on the landing, on D-Day, I was the only troop commander left on my feet at the end of the day, and the total strength of the unit, we lost half. So in other words, when we attacked this Langoon strong point, we only had 50% of our strength to do it with.
You're talking about the whole of the commander?
The whole of the commander, yes. We had, the strength of the commander was 450, and for the next few months we operated on about 200. But most of these casualties were at sea, with the either being shot up at sea, or caught on the beach, or as I say, returned to England. So,
how had you felt before D-Day? What was your morale like before you went in?
Oh, fine. Nothing. I don't know. Nothing seemed to worry us at all.
What had the actual crossing been like for you?
On the to France,
the Channel crossing.
Oh, terrible! And one thing that happened to me was that on the rehearsal landing at West Whitving, which is quite near where we are now, I got sunk, not sunk, but I had to go ashore completely up to my neck in water. I got a chill. We stayed out all night without any equipment at all, no blankets. We did an exercise during the night. I went down with the flu, which turned out to be malaria, if you please, which had obviously been contacted in Italy or Sicily.
How long did that take you to recover from?
Well, this would be in May, so I didn't really recover. The doctor, the unit doctor, who was a very fine Royal Army Medical Corps officer who had also been an Oxford or Cambridge rowing blue. We were living, by the way, on the training for D-Day in the town of Gravesend, because it was thought that, as all of us had been away for a couple of years or a year and a half, that it would be wrong to send us up into the mountains of Scotland. But we needed a little of the comforts of home, so we were billeted in with private families in Gravesend. I had a very nice family I was staying with, and the doctor would visit me twice a day. He wouldn't put me into hospital, because if I'd gone into hospital, I would have not been able to go on D-Day. So he came to visit me two or three times a day, and my landlady, who was a wonderful woman, sort of nursed me. And then when the unit went by train to Southampton, where there was we were put into barbed wire compound, so we couldn't talk to anybody while we were briefed. Now, I was too weak to go on the train, so I went with the padre in the colonel's staff car, which was rather pleasant. So even on D-Day, I wasn't very strong, feeling a bit weak.
Before we go on to the breakout, could you just take me through your own experience of the D-Day landing again, so I've got it clear, please?
Yeah, well, we were 45 minutes behind the North Shore Regiment, and I know I was on the ship with the little landing craft with the colonel, and they didn't get any signal from the headquarters ship about going in, so they decided they should go in anyway, and this was turned out to be a bit of a disaster.
Can you describe it again, please?
As far as the landing was, well, the ships were very unsuitable. We were completely exposed on the left flank, as I mentioned before, and we were shot up from the Germans from the town of Saint-Aubin, which was on the left.
Could you see the Germans who were shooting at you?
No, you couldn't see them, no.
Can you tell me about the German who was firing from behind the bodies, please?
Well, it's obviously a German who's a good rifleman. I never call if anybody says a sniper missed me, I say you're wrong. They don't usually miss. But he was a very good shot, this chap. And there was no way he could see where he was, so there was no return of fire for this chap. But as I say, to be on the left-hand end of extreme end of a landing beach, it was, to my mind, stupid.
And he was firing when you were ashore?
Oh yes, he was firing when we were ashore. He got this bead on this corner, a wall that we had on the beach. There was a wall from a house which people had to go, the men had to go around. And as they went around, he'd pick them off. Now, I suppose a bit of experience, I waited till he'd fired, and while he was reloading, I made a dash for it. So maybe a little bit of experience there.
And when you landed, how wet did you get?
Oh, I was completely soaked. In fact, another thing I should have mentioned was that when I got down this ramp, there was a very turbulent sea and a big undertow, and I felt my legs going backwards, and somehow I managed to keep going. Some of we had these rubber life belts, inflatable life belts around the chest, and some of the men were floating up, they had the legs kicked away, and they were floating upside down with the legs in the air. It was rather unpleasant.
Now, can you take me to the breakout from Normandy, please?
Well, the breakout, we were around this town of Troarn, and we had to make a dash for about 6 miles to a place called Dojolay, where the Germans were holding out the high ground. But we had to get underneath the Germans on the hill behind before it got light. Then the next day we did an encircling movement. I think the paratroopers were going down the main road, so we did an encircling movement and tried to cut them off, but from this time on the Germans kept ahead of us most of the time until we got to one place called Pont-l'Évêque, and it was, we thought we'd have to do a river crossing, but before we did the river crossing, the Germans had pulled away, so we didn't have to do that.
So what happened to you then?
Well, we weren't mechanized, so a lot of it was all marching. There was one night where we had a brigade march in single file through the night, with each troop commander being given a certain part on the map where he had to do a compass march, and we had the whole brigade in single file behind whoever was leading. And of course, some were going asleep on their feet and shunting into each other, but there was no contact with the enemy at all. They just kept going, and we got to a place called Duclair on the River Seine, and the engineers had these storm boats, and some of the men had to paddle the way across, others had little, but I was put in charge of all the weapons, all the vehicles, and had to go round through Rouen, which was a little deep. And I remember we crossed the river on what had been the railway bridge, which had backers broken, and they had put wooden boarding on the tracks, and I think still at that time there were dead Germans and horses underneath the boarding, and we actually went down for into a couple of feet of water where the bridge was completely broken, but we had no trouble. So then we lost contact with the enemy. I had to find my own. The commando again, but at that stage we were called off and were put into a very nice town of, I think it was called Valmont, where there were two or three chateaus, and we lived rather pleasantly for a time. Shortly after that, after the Le Havre had been captured by the forgotten division now, I think it was the Highland Division, we were sent in there to stop looting and police the area until we were relieved by the battalion of the Highland Division, and we were moved up.
What did you see in Le Havre?
Well, the problem with Le Havre was the fact that apparently the Air Force had bombed the town really heavily and done very little damage to the Germans, and the The townspeople were a little bit hostile. They weren't.
How did they show their hostility?
Oh, they just mainly with no enthusiasm whatsoever. Whereas once we crossed the River Seine, all the villagers turned out and just cheered us on. And they were very, very happy to be liberated, which had not happened up till the River Seine.
And after that?
After that, we were moved up to the outskirts of Dieppe, where the Germans were holding on to the port, and all we had to do was contain it. But our brigade, which was four commandos, were down to about 800 men, and we had about 25 miles of front to hold, not so much hold, but just to contain the Germans. They weren't trying to break out, but we would do patrolling and try and shoot them up a bit from time to time. And what did happen is that the Germans gave up their outposts. So we were, my troop, of course, with the heavy weapons, was very, very highly involved. We did a lot. What we used to do, one thing, we tried to fool the Germans by, the Germans themselves weren't very smart at doing things. They always did what they were told. Well, we were allowed a certain amount of initiative. Such things as we got a big truck, we took off the silencer and drove it very slowly in first gear to sound like a tank. And we reversed our bellies so the blackout lining would more or less suggest that we were part of the tank corps.
Do you think this deception worked?
Oh, yes. The other thing was, one day we I don't know where we found this Bofors gun. We pushed it backwards to quite close to the enemy. Also pushed a Jeep backwards. Coupled them up. Just sprayed this Bofors gun all over the place and took off very fast. And the Germans shelled this area for 2 days and we weren't there. So I don't know if these are interesting points for you. Then in my own troop, just to give the impression of there were a lot of us, we'd have a daily program. I might start off with, take two Vickers machine guns together one place and another two somewhere else, then suddenly we'd split them up and have four different sightings, and the mortars were doing the same, so we'd be moving around quite a lot, giving the impression there's far more of us than there were.
And this is at Dieppe?
At Dieppe, yeah. Now, if I remember right, Dieppe never did surrender. They, not until the end of the war, they hung on there. Then, from that point, we heard that we were going to do the assault on the island of Volkeren in Holland on the north side of the River Scheldt. And we moved up into a place called Den Haan. I think the French called it Le Coq. And we were nicely housed in seaside homes, which were owned by wealthy Brussels people, I would imagine. So while we were living quite comfortably, we were doing training in the similar dunes to the ones we were going to land on in Volkeren. And we did lots of field firing exercises in those dunes. And the next course thing was, we trained there for several weeks, and was the landing itself.
Can you take me through this landing in detail, step by step?
Yeah, well, we were, why they marched us from Den Haan to, Ostend. And we left there about, I suppose, midnight. It was quite rough. And we arrived opposite the town of Westkapelle at the west tip of the island of Volkeren at about 9 o'clock in the morning. And the assault went in. I was on the second wave again, which is not the best place to be. Of course, if you're in the first wave, you might consider only in front of you is open season. And on the way in, we were going to float ourselves ashore on amphibians, which were called buffaloes. A buffalo, it looks like a tank, has a big rear door into which you could get a jeep. You could get a jeep on this thing. But I had my Vickers machine guns in my little buffalo, 40,000 rounds of ammunition, I believe. And on the way in, we had a direct hit. I had my elbows on the over the driving compartment, and I was looking through with binoculars, and a 6-inch shell from one of the big batteries there went right into the driving compartment, and the whole thing got on fire, and I was blown right to the back of the thing. And the colonel told me that he wanted me to land on the beach, go over the dunes, and go across the flooded water inside the dunes. The whole island had been sunk by the RAF, and it was below sea level. And I had to float my way into the town and find somewhere above the ground where I could do a 90-degree shoot. But he said he'd decided, come to his decision, and decided to sacrifice me and my machine gunners, which wasn't very nice. Anyway, that was the end of that. And well, of course, the driver and operator were obviously killed, and I had two sappers with me, one on each side, and we were looking where we could go if we got ashore. Those two were killed. I was in the middle. I was all right.
You were uninjured?
Well, I was uninjured. I had what they call a machine gun slide rule, which was in front of my, around the mouth of my neck and in front. It's a piece of wood covered in a sort of aluminum or aluminium. And this thing, something ricocheted, a piece of ricocheted off this and took out my jacket, my pocket of the parachute jackets we were wearing. But I was quite all right. So I was very fortunate. Well, then we tried to manhandle the guns ashore, but before we were able to do anything, I remember we had a machine gun tripod, a little weasel went by, another amphibian. We checked this on the weasel, one of my own weasels, and all we landed was two tripods. But then the captain of this landing craft tank, which contained these buffaloes and weasels, he just turned around and took off. Then he hit a mine, and all my boys were sunk. And then they were returned to Ostend. So not a very nice scene for me either again.
What happened next?
Well, I couldn't do much. I think I hadn't any troops to look after, so I helped sort of make some provision for getting weasels and these buffaloes along the beaches to move up to the troops. Well, the battles that our main objective was a battery of 4 6-inch guns in very heavy concrete, and it took 2 days to take those.
What was your own part in that?
Well, I wasn't doing anything then. So I was left out of it. Apart from which, I think I was a bit not spaced out. I think this has hit me mentally a bit, and I wasn't exactly myself. I think I'm more stunned than anything else.
But physically uninjured?
Oh, physically, yes. No trouble at all.
And then?
Well, the battles went on for, I think it was, we landed on the 1st, and the Germans